둘, 셋, 파!
Borahe Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap. Also, on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here, for checking out the series. Do hit that subscribe button if you're not already. I'll give you new interviews just like this one every single week. You can find us Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or again, anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. We've had some great guests drop by lately. Peyton List, the actress who stars in both Cobra Kai and School Spirits. We talk with Josh Homme of Queens of the Stone Age. Sam Yeager, you can see him in The Handmaid's Tale and Wolfman. Members of Genesis, Sonic Youth, Heart, the B-52s, Pavement. Troy Imbelisario, who stars in On Call and comes from Pretty Little Liars. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, it's going to be a retrospective, a rewind. We are looking back. John Fogerty, Doug Clifford, and Stu Cook. Three names forever linked to one of rock's greatest legacies, Creedence Clearwater Revival. Of course, their swampy sound, blue-collar storytelling, and unshakable hooks made them legends, churning out hit after hit in just a few short years. In fact, the entirety of the band as CCR was 5 years and 7 albums. But of course, behind the music was a history of tension, lawsuits, and one of rock's most infamous breakups. Now, decades later, the music still endures, and so do the stories. And we get to talk about the past, present, and lasting impact of these rock and roll icons. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to start with my conversation with John Fogerty, which we taped back in 2013 as he was releasing an album called Wrote a Song for Everyone, where he gathered some of music's biggest names to help him reimagine some of his greatest songs. And of course, we got the stories behind tackling Fortunate Son with the Foo Fighters, having Bob Seger play Who'll Stop the Rain through a phone, and the comparisons of Jennifer Hudson to Tina Turner, all on a rooftop. We were on a rooftop in Austin, Texas, during South by Southwest. It was a very surreal moment and a very cool moment. So part one of this rewind with Creedence Clearwater Revival, it's Kyle Meredith with John Fogerty.
It's great to have you out here. Thank you so much for joining us, first off.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you.
So this record that's coming out, Wrote a Song for Everyone. This is great. We're going to have you tell us about it here, because I guess basically what has happened is you've invited a bunch of artists along to, what do you call it? It's not just re-record your tracks.
Well, we did kind of new versions of a lot of my songs, some of which are old and some of which are newer. But yeah, songs like Proud Mary. Jennifer Hudson joined me on that, along with Alan Toussaint. And that was kind of the spirit of the whole thing. My wife actually suggested this thing. And what she said was, well, why don't you get a bunch of the artists that you love and have them do your songs with you? And it seemed like such an intriguing idea. Really, to me, it sounded like Christmas. Because instead of some, you know, record company thing or agent thing, you know, all that career move kind of thing, it was just something with people that I, you know, I buy their records, people I like. And having them join me in the studio, the whole idea was to work up kind of a new and different arrangement of the songs you've heard before, and I've certainly heard before, and you know, give them a new spin with new people playing and all that kind of thing. So that's what we did.
They're the best songs ever!
Thanks, man.
You've already mentioned it, so let's jump into that one. Jennifer Hudson does Proud Mary. That's not the first time we've heard this song covered. In fact, there's another very famous version of this.
Well, yeah, actually, and of course, Jennifer is a sweet thing. I imagine when she was a little girl somewhere along the way, she kind of latched on to Tina Turner and, you know, what a terrific role model for a little girl, right? And so she had a demo worked up that sounded remarkably like the Tina Turner version. And my wife and I kind of thought about it, and one day we were really talking about a different song, and I said something about kind of rearranging this other song and make it, you know, kind of put it through New Orleans. It's a place that we really love to go. And we go down there to the Jazz Fest all the time. And my wife looked back at me and she forgot all about the other song I was talking about. Her eyes got real big and she said, Proud Mary. I said, what are you talking about? She said, we should do that with Proud Mary. And basically we took a musical journey of just about everything you know about New Orleans,
right?
And did Proud Mary, because Proud Mary is such a New Orleans song. You know, I've been very blessed in my life to have this thing so well received and played all over the world, you know, all that sort of thing. And so my wife is a very intuitive and soulful person. And when that light goes on in her eyes, I just kind of go, whoa. You know, she's connected to something, and sure. I just pay attention.
It's always nice to celebrate those women in our lives, isn't it?
Anyway, it turned out really great. So y'all are going to have to hear that, but you'll have to wait until the record comes out to hear that.
Yeah. You said this wasn't really a strategy move at all, but at the same time...
Lord knows I'm not the guy with a strategy. Oh, my God.
Poster child.
If I'd have had a strategy, right. I probably would have kept my mouth shut a long time ago.
You're the poster child for keeping those royalties and masters and everything.
Yeah, right. Well, I didn't get to keep them, but just to get past that subject matter, I will tell you, I met a beautiful woman and fell in love, and it's the most important thing in the whole wide world, and all that other stuff really doesn't matter. Yeah. It just, you know, it's behind me. There's some famous athlete, I think. It's behind me now! Anyway, so, you know, I don't worry about that. It's all turned out pretty cool.
Sure.
True love is a lot more important than money anyway.
Yeah. That's worthy. That's definitely worthy.
Here's up for Proud Mary!
By the way, we got Zach Brown on the record, too.
Is there something at this point, though, about making your mark with your legacy? Because these are great songs, and you're having great artists come through, and, you know, and you're looking at, you know, the entire scope of your history at this point. I imagine at some point there's got to be a little bit about, this is my legacy.
You know, I don't sit around and worry about that a lot, in fact, ever. It's kind of, that's just sometimes I'm surprised that I'm the guy that wrote Proud Mary.
Right.
You know, it's just kind of weird because I'm kind of mostly in the present, and I'm always kind of, I got kids and, you know, bills and school and all that stuff. I'm a most boring guy you ever met, by the way. You know, I take care of the family and do that kind of thing and get up every day before 6. And most rock and roll musicians you ever heard of ain't doing, they're probably just getting in, you know. So I kind of don't think about that part, but being in a studio with Brad Paisley and kind of going toe to toe with the Telecaster and going, okay. I mean, that was a load of fun,
yeah.
Right? We did a song of mine called Hot Rod Heart, and it was Brad's idea. He said, well, I got a couple of musical twists, you know, he wanted to change my old version. He said, also, I kind of want to have a shootout down on Main Street, you know, a guitar duel, you know, like a couple of gunslingers. And I don't know if I said the words out of my mouth, but in my brain, my mind formed the idea, I'm already dead. You know, Brad is probably the greatest Telecaster player in the whole world. And so I figured I had a plan. I didn't try to whoop him. I just kind of did what I do best instead.
Yeah. Wait, and that brings up good to it. You get with all these artists and you're saying, let's redo these songs. Let's not just do a flat cover version. What's the one that came in that most surprised you, where you said, this is like an entirely different song? I'm guessing there was that moment.
I don't know. I think a lot of them are quite different than the way they were before. I mean, even Proud Mary is like a whole new... Oh, I can't... It's... I don't want to give it away. It's really joyful, though.
Yeah.
It's happy. In fact, the mood of this album is very happy. Did a song called wrote a song for everyone. It's an old song I did in my Creedence days.
Yeah!
Did that with Miranda Lambert. And she sang her tail up. I mean, that lady sounds so great. And in the guitar solo in the middle is Tom Morello.
Oh, yeah! Which is an amazing matchup right there. Who would put those together?
Oh, well, it's so beautiful. I mean, and it, you know, it's like by the time that thing's over, you just kind of... You know, it's really happy and cool, and, you know, that's what music's all about. I couldn't tell you what format that is. I have no idea.
That's not the first time. That was recently covered, too. Jeff Tweedy produced with Wrote a Song for Everyone.
Was that Mavis Staples?
Mavis Staples.
Yeah.
That was it. I'm sure these come at you all the time where people are covering songs. Do you always get them? Do you get to hear them beforehand, or is it a surprise?
Believe it or not... You all know who Mr. Spock is, you know, on Star Trek. Yeah.
Leonard Nimoy?
Yeah, he did Proud Mary way back in the day. I think it's on the same album. He did a song called Bilbo Baggins.
It just makes the geek culture in a full circle.
Yeah,
right.
Are
you happy with how these songs have progressed and aged through the years? I mean, these artists coming in, you know.
Well, look, I'm really tickled, I must say humbled, that people wanted to do this with me. You know, it's, I can say, you call somebody up and they actually know your name. That's awesome. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things in life you want to do, and it doesn't mean you get to do them, and sometimes it just kind of humiliates you when you can't even get a table in a good restaurant, you know? Get out of here! We're full! You know, that kind of thing. So to have somebody actually call you back with ideas that they've been thinking about, you know, that's a really nice thing. Bob Seger calling me up on his cell phone and singing Who'll Stop the Rain to me, right?
On a cell phone?
Yeah, because he said, oh, I got it. I'm going to do Who'll Stop the Rain. All right, Bob, you're going to. All right, Bob.
You did the arm throw just like he does.
Yeah. Well, he sat there in his, I guess he was in his living room, and he had a guitar, and he kind of sang, this is about how it's going to go, and hung his arm, you know, whoa, that's awesome. Then I called him back one day. I couldn't get a hold of him for a long time. When I finally did get a hold of him, he was in a Wendy's. He had just been to Gettysburg, you know, the battlefield. I guess that was like the first time in his life, and he might have been with his kids, and it was like a family moment or something, but... I could hear the windy guy go, okay, was that a chocolate shake with a whopper or whatever they call them there? And I'm interrupting a family moment. Bob, I'll call you back later because you're going to have to eat that burger.
It's a shame you couldn't put that on the record. One of the big ones, of course, is the Foo Fighters covering Fortunate Son. Yeah. I want to read a quote that you said last night, Stubbs outside, playing with the Foo Fighters. You said, you gotta have a little boy in you to play rock and roll music.
You gotta have a lot of little boys.
A lot of little boys in you to play rock and roll music.
That's right.
And that seems like it especially proves true when you're playing that song with the Foo Fighters.
Well, you know, yeah, it's, you know that little devilish grin when you first get an idea that you're going to RF somebody, you know, and you're going to play a prank on them or whatever, and they don't know it yet, and you get that little thing, you can just feel your face lighten up, and you're going to do something. It's not really evil, it's just sort of, it's a practical joke, but you know about it, and the other one doesn't know yet, and you know they ain't going to hate you forever. At some point, they'll forgive you. But right now, you're going to do it, and you're going to pull this one. And that's how I feel out there in front of people. I get to stand there with Dave Grohl and the Foos, and we're doing this rocking song and having the time of our life, and somebody's actually paid money to watch that.
Well, I think you're a bit more humble than, you know. This is one of the great Hall of Famers right here. Listen, Mr. Fogarty, we have appreciated every single note you have ever put to tape for your entire career, and we thank you for stopping by today here in Sony City here on the Weekly Feed.
Well, thank you. Thank you all for coming out, too.
And we'll be right back right after this.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel. An official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back. Now time for part two of this Rewind with CCR. And this one goes to my 2019 interview with bassist Stu Cook, as we talked about what it was like having a second life with their follow-up band, Creedence Clearwater Revisited, but also why they decided to put that act to rest. We hear about their appreciation with The Big Lebowski and Stephen King, Woodstock 69, what that was like for them, and a whole lot more. This is a part two of a Rewind with CCR. It's Kyle Meredith with Stu Cook.
Good morning.
I got to say what an honor it is to talk to you first. So there's an upcoming tour with Revisited and everything that's going on there, but we'll get to that in a second. I thought we'd start with the beginning because, you know, as anniversaries go, if we want to split hairs, it's kind of the 60th anniversary of the band, if you want to go back to the beginning, right? Like predating all the others.
Well, yeah, I guess you could look at it that way. I've known Doug for 61 years this September, and it was about a year after I first met him that we got together with John Fogarty and formed the Blue Velvets. So, yeah, I hadn't even thought about that amongst all the other anniversaries and celebrations going on. Last year was Creedence Clearwater Revival's 50th, mm-hmm. Woodstock 50 this year, Revisited 25 this year.
It's everything in there. I thought, you know, you all having started, you know, so 59, 60. I mean, it does. It's before the second wave of rock and roll. I mean, you all, you know, by the time it all did roll around, as history has told many, many times, you know, you had been together for a while. But to see all of that, I mean, it changed so much so quickly. What was that transition like for you all? And did you find it natural and easy?
Nah, you know, I'm on the inside, right? So I have a different perspective than a writer or a critic or a fan in general. To me, it seemed like a fairly logical evolution, actually. We started with a core of music that we all agreed that we liked, rhythm and blues. Some country was, you know, our core agreement. And as we got better, we became more able to express ourselves like the people we had idolized when we first began.
Once it all happens, it happened very quickly. it looks like
about a 3.5-year rocket ride.
Yeah,
I recall.
But you know, when you talk about 1969, as many of us do, and especially on the 50th anniversary, you know, a lot of artists are talked about, but it does seem like nobody had more of a 1969 than Creedence Clearwater Revival. I mean, three records in 1 year, which is, and all three of them are amazing. They're all great. Talking about Bayou Country and Green River and Willie and the Poor Boys, for something that's happening in that quick a succession, do those records do they sound separate in your mind, or is that all just one clump of music?
Well, it's a bit of both. I'd have to say that it was, you know, a pretty intense period for the band. Bayou Country was recorded in 68, but released January of 69. So it can be lumped in, you know, but like I said, it was all part of, you know, we would make singles. When you had enough singles, then you would almost had an album. Then you would do a couple of what they eventually called album tracks. And then you would have a complete record, and out it would go. But we were recording singles all the time. So it seemed like, you know, one long record to us. You know, and when you got between eight and 11 of them together, then you put out an album. And albums had just become the new medium. You know, when we grew up, it was singles, 45s, right? Then came the long play. First, there was 78s,
right?
That broke very easily. And then the 45s were flexible vinyl, big hole in the middle. And then the long play, 33 and a third, double-sided. So you got, maybe you could get, depending on the length of the program, you could get four or five, maybe six songs a side. So, yeah, that was a change in the marketplace, in the industry. But for us, it was just making something for the radio.
Right, and recording. Somebody else almost, it sounds like somebody else almost slaps a title on it eventually to say, these songs go together now.
Yeah. I mean, they had to.
Right. Well, you know, so, of course, you know, you can't look at that year without Woodstock. And we are celebrating the 50th anniversary of Woodstock. The concert is finally getting released on August 2nd. I know that big box set is coming out as well. But, you know, in that moment, you know, what I've got written down here was the moment versus what it became. Because in that moment, was it just another show?
Pretty much. Yeah. It was the summer of festivals. All, you know, there was festivals all over the country, coast to coast, and in the middle as well. At the time, you know, it seemed like it was a pretty big undertaking, but you know, they all were. We never really thought that it was going to be such a remembered event. You know, there were bigger festivals for sure, and there have been since. But I think it was the spirit of the crowd that makes it stand out. Now, I look at it now, and I think the bands were just the background music for some other kind of event that happened that nobody hadn't happened before and hasn't happened since. That's my takeaway now. You know, when we, but you know, on the other hand, when we came over the hill in the helicopter to get to the concert site, and there was a sea of humanity. It was quite a sight to behold.
Yeah, was there a moment that you noticed that it had become something different, you know, years down the road or whatever?
Well, sure. I mean, once all the stories were woven together and we had a film to document, you know, to show all the stuff, you couldn't possibly know everything that went on. Even if you were there, you couldn't have known everything that was transpiring. So the film was a you know, a great document of when, you know, what people can do, how it can happen. It's mired in controversy right now. I don't know. Do you know if there's going to be that something? Last I heard was that the venue had been
right.
Pulled.
It has.
So sort of like the first one, right? It didn't have a venue either.
Well, you know, Michael Lang has a way of it seems of. I don't know what's, you know, I'll say a bit candidly here, and you know, I'll make sure to point out that I'm not putting words in your mouth. It's my opinion here that it seems like everybody tries to put on a festival, and they can pull it off once. Like, anybody can do a festival these days, and that makes it really surprising to me that Woodstock has had so much trouble, because if any festival is going to get off the ground these days, I feel like that would be one of the easiest. But it is marred in controversy again, and who knows, because I haven't, I mean, their band's still on the bill, you know, whether or not it happens, I don't know.
I think it's, You know, anybody can do a festival. Michael Lang has done all the Woodstock festivals. Some were, you know, the first one was the one. He's also did the one that turned into riots and chaos. So I don't know that it makes any sense to try and recreate with another concert, you know, to celebrate the first one. But I'm watching this one from the sidelines.
Well, you know, I do think it all is all about, as you mentioned, the spirit of it. I mean, as you said, that is what made that first one so memorable. 94 was a good concert. It was really, you know, for a lot of the lineup right there. But did music change the world? I mean, with all of that spirit and the music as the background, you know, can it, you know, and is that possible today, you know, for something like this?
I'm afraid it isn't. I don't know that it ever was able to change the world with music, I'm referring to. It brings people together. It's a very unique art form in that it is really doesn't have any guardrails. And, you know, it's very difficult for it to be co-opted. You know, it's personal. It's universal at the same time. It's quite a gift. And combined with the spirit of Woodstock, you know, people thought that there was something there. But on its own, music has devolved into some other kind of product, you know, that you eat now. It's very disposable. So, you know, I guess everybody would hope that eyes could be opened and kept open. But, you know, we quickly move on. So, you know, certainly John Lennon took a shot at that. And, you know, got a lot of attention and it made sense. But I think it has to be evaluated or, you know, viewed with, you know, what has actually changed. To try and keep it going is the hard part. You know, the idea is always great, but keeping it going is the hard work, right? So right. I wouldn't expect that to be the true function of music. So it's always nice to have music, though. You know, it may not fix the problems of the world, but it makes your day nicer.
I'll actually jump around, too, because, you know, there is the power of music making, because as Creedence Clearwater Revisited now, you know, here you are on a farewell tour, but there is a partnership, right? Something that you guys are doing towards the end of the tour with a Museum of Music, Making Music, and the Friends of San Pasquale Academy. This has to do, though, with the power of music a bit, like those entities there, right?
Well, of course. I mean, music is what brings the, you know, all the energy together in one spot. But that alone isn't enough, right? People have to actually do the hard work. It's great inspiration in that, you know, and, you know, my career has never failed to amaze me. how just something as simple as, you know, a 3-chord song can, how far it can take you. You know, I've been around the world several times based on 40 or 50 songs.
You know, it also a part of the farewell tour as you're being billed. Why is this the farewell tour? And does this mean retirement, or what is exactly does that? Because that's a loaded word for a lot of people.
Yeah, I know. Retirement's bad, right? work until you drop. No, we're hanging it up this year because we're still hitting on all 8 cylinders. We're consistent. We're having a good time with the music, but the road is just not a place where you want to be. You know, we've done it for 25 years. We've been to some places, you know, over a dozen times. And, you know, there's still time left in our lives to do other things that we also enjoy. You know, we've all got bigger families now. We have grandkids, which we'd like to spend more time with. And we've still got some additional traveling to do. My wife and I are still checking things off the list. I like to spend some time in Central America, where I do a lot of vacationing. And, you know, it's just time to move on, really. 25 years is 20 more than we ever thought we'd do this. So, you know, it's been a great ride. And, you know, the support of the Creedence Clearwater Revival fans has been terrific. You know, the project was started just to celebrate and honor the quartet, the work of the quartet, and to get us out of the house, you know. And yeah. Now it's time, I think, some of our time could be better spent around the house. So, you know, Doug and I are neither going to leave. We're not leaving the music business. We're not leaving music, but we are leaving the road.
Yeah, I'd read that you know, when you all started Revisited, Doug had actually considered that he was probably retired at that point, 25 years ago.
Yeah. I ended up, I was living in Los Angeles, and, you know, it was time for a change. So I ended up in Incline Village, Nevada, where Doug and his family had been living for 10 years or something like that, 10, 12 years. Forget exactly how many, but so we started hanging out, jamming all the time, and you know, the idea to get back in the saddle was almost obvious, you know. But up until then, you know, we distance had kept us from really focusing on anything, any kind of collaboration. But when we just lived across town from each other, it made all the sense in the world to get together and hang out and start playing and looking for other guys to play. And so it was. We had no idea where it was taking us until now, you know, this year we realize, you know, it's taken us, we've gone as far as we really want to with this project. It's been a terrific experience, and, you know, we've always blessed to get a second bite of the apple, especially when it's so sweet. But I like to put it this way, there's more sand in the bottom of the glass than the top right now, and for me, it doesn't make a lot of sense to keep doing the same thing over and over again when I can be doing other things that I put on the back shelf.
Well, I know you've done producing and of course collaborating all through your career. I did want to bring up one of those because you produced one of Rocky Erickson's records with the Evil One, who we of course lost earlier this year. And talk about one of those artists who just deserved more. You know, we're such big fans of him around here. Did you all keep in touch through the years?
Yes and no. You know, we saw each other. I was living in Austin for a while, and I would see Rocky around town and you know, attend his performances whenever I could. But, you know, it was we recorded 15 songs together, which were spread out over two albums. The first one is called The Evil One. The second one was just shortened to T-E-O. Mm-hmm. So there's, in their original configuration, there are, you know, five shared songs and five different songs on each disc. But, yeah, that was quite an experience. I think that was when I really realized what a record producer was supposed to do. Rocky didn't make it easy for me, but we had a great time. And I think the result stands the test of time. It was a very productive era or period in Rocky's life. Mm-hmm. He was really on his game. You know, he had a lot of ups and downs. And I thought the work we did together was some of the best that he did in his whole career. You know, it's just, and it came together in a kind of a crazy way. It was very organic, and I know that he liked the records that we did, so that, you know, that's enough for me.
Is that something you're going to do more of? Or are you looking to do more of?
You know, I really don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to scuba dive more. I'm going to play golf more. I'm going to ride my bike more. And, you know, I've every once in a while I'll do some project for somebody. I'll, you know, lay down some bass tracks for people that, you know, were interested in my style of playing. I want to incorporate it into what they're doing. You know, I do that kind of stuff. I've had an offer to produce some tracks for other artists. You know, I don't have a plan. Right now, the plan is to play great this year.
That's an easy plan.
Yeah.
Keep it easy in the sights. I'll finish up here with a bit more of a trivial question, too, because, you know, Creedence has probably been used in movies just about more than any other band, the songs in there. And I couldn't even pretend to start naming half of them. do you got a favorite? You know, is there a favorite movie moment with a CCR song that you've got?
Yeah, I think that although it's not a song per se, it's in The Big Lebowski.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the dude's car is stolen. And he's talking to the cop about the incident, and he mentions that there was a Creedence tape, paraphrasing it. You know, and the cop says, "Well, we might be able to get your car back, but I wouldn't hold out any hope for the Creedence tape." Words to that effect. Anyhow, it's always nice to be written into a script. You know, it's almost better. It's almost better than having a song in the movie is to actually, you know, been inside the writer's head so much that you know, Stephen King has done that as well with Creedence. He'll use Creedence to describe a time and a feeling, you know, just to take you into his writing. So, you know, that's the highest honor, I think.
It just seemed like for a long time there, if there was a war scene, especially a Vietnam scene, you knew that,
right.
You know, Run Through the Jungle was going to be played, or Fortunate Son, one of those, you know, something like that. Yeah. It was going to be played.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Run Through the Jungle isn't even about the Vietnam War. Yeah. But anyway, people associate, and then it's very difficult to unassociate, right?
Well, it's interesting. By the way, side note, Louisville, it's where I'm based right here, and we're the home of the Lebowski Fest. We have nothing to do with the movie, but we are the home of the Lebowski Fest. So.
What happens then?
They watch them. It's been going on for like 15, 16 years every year. You know, it's just one of those. I know they have different movies like that all around the country, the festivals, but they watch the movie. They've got games where, you know, taking little scenes from the movie and they've made it a game. They always have some bands around to play songs from the soundtrack and all that. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of kitschy
fun. That sounds cool. Yeah. I like it.
That's a lot of fun. So you're actually well represented here in Louisville at least once a year beyond all the usual radio airplay. So.
I like it. Yeah, Creedence gets as much airplay as anybody.
Yeah.
Maybe more, to the chagrin of new artists, you know.
Well, it just goes to say, you know, to show how well these songs were crafted and everything. And, when you had, you know, the original run and everything and those songs and the Chronicle Greatest Hits, but to turn around with Recollection or Recollection, I think it's however you might say that. With Revisited.
It works both ways. That was sort of the idea.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you all did that again, to have that success prove itself again, I mean, because that became a platinum-selling record in itself.
That's right. It's a double platinum album.
That says everything about those songs right there and what you all did. And you know, I thank you all for the music. And I know many people do, but I'm so happy that it happened the way it did.
Yeah, it's all of us realize that we're blessed, that we could still scratch our heads and wonder how we could have had not only one, but two great careers from the original work. It's amazing we even had one career, actually. Given the music business.
Right. Congratulations on all of that, and you know, congratulations on knowing when to hang it up for yourself, you know, and to do other things. Be looking forward to this this farewell tour and catching you guys out there. And I'll make mention of a special show September 25th. I know that's in partnership with the Museum of Making Music, Friends of the San Pasquale Academy, which is a nice good turn part of this tour. So, Stu, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for doing this.
All right. I'll see everybody at the Belly Up Tavern in Solana Beach for this great event that's coming up.
All right. Take care, man. We'll see you around.
Nice talking with you. Have a good day.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. Now time for part three of this Rewind with CCR. From 2021, I sat down with CCR drummer Doug Cosmo Clifford. He had just released the album For All the Money in the World, a record he wrote and recorded with Steve Wright in the mid-80s and kept inside his Cosmo's vaults. We got to talk about why he sat on the album for so long, tapping Joe Satriani to play guitar, and the other vault records that he had in mind to release. Part three of Kyle Meredith with CCR, it's Doug Cosmo Clifford.
Hey, Kyle, how's it going?
Man, it's been great. It's good to talk to you again. I've had so much fun listening to a completely surprise album to us, For All the Money in the World. It's such a great listen. Not so much a surprise for you, as I understand you've been sitting on this one for quite some time, haven't you?
Well, I have, and it was well worth the wait.
So what is the story here? Because this is a record that you recorded with Steve Wright over 30 years ago. What brought it on, and what why sit on it this whole time?
Well, we were trying to... first of all, we started out... writing together, and it was a real nice partnership, very easy to do. We've hand in glove. But the next thing you know, we have a bunch of songs, and so let's record these things, so you know, then we can move on. And when I record, I like to get record quality recordings as a producer, and that's why they don't sound like demos. And we also were going to put together a band, so I brought in some guitar players. We had everybody but the guitar players, and we have three monster guitar players: Joe Satriani, Greg Douglas, and Jimmy Lyon, all on this record. They're all Bay Area guys, Bay Area, meaning the San Francisco Bay Area, and the East Bay, which is the blue-collar side, not the fancy side over in San Francisco. So we're more in the rock and roll side of it, the blue side of it. That was sort of our forte. After, you know, we had done probably 9 different recordings, that's why I have all the guitar players. I wouldn't have them all in one session. That would be kind of crazy. But anyway, what we came up with is 11 songs that sound just terrific together, and it's, you know, rock and roll, and boy, do we need some rock and roll now. Back to your question, when things didn't go the way we wanted them to go, things weren't moving that fast, and other things, life, kids, all of that sort of thing, I put it in Cosmos Vault. My nickname is Cosmos, so I have a vault, and into the vault they went. And I have about 10 albums worth of stuff with different artists, and eventually they'll all come out, but right now, for all the money in the world is the album and the first single off the album. Really a terrific singer in Keith England, and so it's kind of a super session really with the guys that we had playing, and Steve Wright's just a monster bass player, so he and I loved getting down in the trenches and pounding out the rhythm section work. So it's an all around really cool listen, as to quote you, and I'm very proud of it and have to get it out so people can hear it. So in terms of that, to me, it's new music because it hasn't been exposed to a listening audience yet.
Well, it's absolutely new to us, and you're right, it was fun. Even from the get-go, even before the notes, the first notes heard on my part, I saw who was involved in it, and you see those names. You mentioned Satriani. I think that was the one that stood out because, you know, he's not doing, I guess what you would say, his typical stuff on this one. Like, how did you know that he would work with what you all were doing?
Well, all those guitar players, at one time or another, were in a great Ken band, so... and then Steve was, of course, in the Great Kid Band as well. And so we were looking for a guy for a session to record the lead parts on these 4 songs. And so Steve suggested we use Joe. And so it was an audition as well as a recording session. And I asked him if he'd like to join the band. And he said, no, he's going to do an instrumental metal record. And we all looked at him and rolled our eyes and said, good luck with that. Well, last laughs are the best laughs, and boy, did he get us on that one.
The first single, I mean, right from the get-go with the title track there, I mean, you know, it does evoke a bit of an era. And I was like, it sounds like an 80s record, but it also doesn't sound like an 80s record. And I think that, you know, goes to attest to you as a producer as well, that, you know, it sort of fits the period, but it works outside of it as well. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but is that something that you kind of, that you were going for at the time, if you remember?
Well, you know, you hit the nail on the head. That's everybody I've talked to in these interviews, have said the same thing, you know, and so I think it's a combination of the song. A good song will be around 10 years, 20 years, 30 years in this case, and then also when I produce a session, I'm in there like I'm producing a record that's going to be a release of from an artist that you know is professionally done. So I just put my computer and my production gear on and went in to any session that I do, especially if I'm mixing. That's where it all comes down. You get good recordings from everybody, and boy, did we have some great guys. And then go into the mixing phase, and it's a totally different ballgame. So That's how I approach music, really. If I'm going to write something and have a demo for someone, I don't want to have just an acoustic guitar and a vocal that isn't even wet. So I like to have that, you know, there's only one chance to make a first impression. So that's how I approach making my records and recording sessions in general.
Well, there's so many cool tracks on here. Lonesome Boy, I think I'm a big fan of. It's got a bit of a Rod Stewart swagger to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
So what else is in the vault? I mean, if this is something that you've been sitting on, are all the rest of the albums to this quality and caliber?
Well, yeah, they are. I have one with Bobby Whitlock. It's the same combination. We co-wrote all the material, and we had a little band going. But his wife didn't like living in the East Bay, and she wanted to live in London. And so in the middle of the night, off he went, and there I was holding the bag. So into the vault she goes, and when it comes out, nobody knows. So that'll be the next release. And then I have another solo. I have a solo album that I put out last year, just when the pandemic hit. Not a good time to do that, but at any rate, that was in there. I've got another solo album's worth of stuff in there that's a little more country than the first one. I've got Sir Douglas Quintet, Sir Doug Song. I've got a whole album of him, and so I've got some pretty cool stuff. Good artist to work with.
Yeah, wow. You've got me baited. At least I'm in for all of them that you said right there. Does this have? I mean, putting Revisited to bed, has that opened the door also for all of this to finally put some concentration on it?
Well, yeah, you're exactly right. You know, I have a dear spot in my heart, Stu Cook, and his bass player for Creedence Clearwater Revival, my old pal, 60 years making records together and playing music. We had a plan, and it was like we were hoping to get 4 years out of that project. We got 25 years out of that project. So, things are funny sometimes. It was a band-driven project, whatever the bands wanted, that's what we did. We never planned on recording in that project. The bands wanted a CD after the show. It somehow got, and South by Southwest got in the hands of an independent record company, and they took it gold, and then it was the most money they'd ever made, so he decided to resurrect the career of Julian Lennon. Bad idea, because our next royalty check bounced. We said, you can't bounce checks to us and still have us stick around. So we got out of that, and then went to a major label, and they took it platinum. So, you know, it's been a storied career, but, you know, I was traveling touring year-round for 25 years. So it was time to put that to bed. We, you know, it served its purpose. I have Parkinson's as well. It started to come in. So we don't do any non-Creedence songs, but I was kind of trying to learn Shake, Rattle, and Roll. But that might be appropriate for my affliction. So that's a little Parkinson's humor. It allowed me now to stay. I stay home. I do it all out of my studio office. And I can spend the right amount of time to promote, and that's why I'm talking to you now.
Well, Cosmo, it's been great talking to you. And again, this is so much fun hearing For All the Money in the World. Thank you for what you're doing. I cannot wait to hear the rest of the vaults. And it's been a pleasure talking to you, man. Thank you so much.
Pleasure's mine. And all I ask is that if you do anything to get it on a playlist, give me a helping hand. Radio is what made Creedence because we were on a jazz label, they didn't know what to do, but radio knew what to do with us, and they're still playing our records 53 years down the road. So hats off to radio, and I love radio.
Thank you so much, man. We'll see you around. Take care.
All right, Kyle. Take care.
And that's it. My thanks to Doug, my thanks to Stu, my thanks to John, my thanks to Creedence Clearwater Revival and all the music that they put out, and my thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here so you can keep up with new interviews just like this one every single week at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. And then after that, you can head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. In fact, one of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from John Prine, Grateful Dead, Jason Isbell, The Buzzcocks, Concrete Blonde, The Backbeat Band, Lenny Kravitz, Modest Mouse, Alejandro Escovedo, David Bowie, The Eagles, and my interview with Dave Davies of The Kinks. That's what you can hear weeknights starting 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.